pity the dead, Harry. Pity the living. And above all, those who live without love, Dumbledore. I am a multidimensional fractal of consciousness currently expressing as a human being in the most authentic way that we can imagine. Always remember to take what resonates and leave the rest. Welcome to Mental Magic. I believe that everyone we encounter in our lives not only has lessons to teach us, but they also carry keys to help unlock aspects of ourselves that we may have forgotten, lost, or even repressed. And as a result of this belief, I am always open and usually so excited to reconnect with people who have been drawn into my world at various points across the timeline of my existence. So today's guest is someone who I knew at a time in my life when I was still terrified of my own shadow, a time in my life where I hardly spoke to anyone who was not in my close friend group because I was overwhelmingly insecure about everything. And so when we reconnected a few months ago, I was actually kind of surprised that he remembered me so well. Parham, as I knew him back then, from my vantage point in high school, he was the focal point of any room that he entered. I mean, his light, his smile, his energy, it just filled classrooms. He was someone who could always make me laugh. And I believe that those of us who carry that gift of being able to make other people smile and to bring levity into the worlds of others, it's one of the most sacred skills that I love discovering and I cherish so deeply. But the thing that I failed to realize in high school is that some of the people who shine the brightest, who are externally filling up a space with their energy, may be going through things that you're unaware of. It's the age-old saying, just be kind because you don't know the battles that anyone is struggling with. And in interviewing Anthony for this episode, this lesson was once again highlighted for me because as he shared some of the struggles and traumatic experiences that he had as a child and during the time that we knew each other, I was able to relate to him on such a different level because I didn't know back then that his story was such a mirror reflection of some of the things that I was dealing with in my own life. And so in today's episode, we bring to light what it was like for us to be raised in the environments that we were raised in and how we have cultivated an inner self-love for the children that we were, for the adults that we are, the humans that we are continually becoming, as well as the hopes we have for the future generation. Anthony is one of the most loving and compassionate fathers to two adorable little boys, and he shares some of the ways that he is teaching his boys how to cultivate self-love within themselves so that they don't have to carry on some of the ancestral trauma that people in the BIPOC community have been carrying for generations. And if you aren't familiar with that term, BIPOC stands for Black and Indigenous People of Color. The way our parents raised us is a reflection of how they were raised by their parents, and their parents raised them based on how they were raised by their parents. And I, at my core, I have to believe that most parents, when they have children, desire and aim to parent their children in ways that they wish their parents would have treated them, and with skills and tools and knowledge to help their children become better than who they are as human beings. I know after doing so much work on my relationship with my own parents, that they absolutely did the best that they could. And I know that those of us who are parenting kids today, we carry with us scars from our childhood, but I'm always so impressed when I can listen to parents talk about the ways that they are not inflicting similar wounding on their children. And so in this episode, I hope you are able to learn some tools and techniques from Anthony about how to build up your own reservoirs of self-love, as he is a licensed marriage and family therapist, predominantly for BIPOC teens and youth, as well as their families. But I also hope that you're able to hear some ideas of how we can not only treat our children in a way that honors their humanity and their autonomy, but also ways that we can honor the autonomy, the humanity, and the perspective of one another. And also, as a complete aside, I had a head cold when we were recording this episode, so my voice doesn't sound so great, so please be aware of that as well. And so without further ado, please enjoy Anthony Parham. Hi, loves. Welcome back. And today's guest is, oh my gosh, someone I have known since high school. It's been a minute since we've connected, but we're going to be talking about self-love, our relationship with ourselves. I'm so excited to dig into this conversation. So Anthony, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Anthony Parham. I am a father. I am a brother. I am a son. I am a Black male. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I love the work that I do, working with the community, being able to support those individuals who allow me to be a part of their journey, and being able to hold space, especially in places where typically BIPOC cannot have space held.
Excellent, excellent. And so my first question for all of my guests is, what does it feel like to be you?
That's an incredible question. And, you know, Christina, I've known you, like we talked about, since high school, you know, and I think it was really interesting for me trying to figure that out. Like, what does it feel like to be me? Because, and I'm sure you've witnessed my struggles too, just like I've seen yours as well. Even though we may not have known the in-depthness of that, mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things where I felt like no one could understand anything that I was going through or what it's like to be me. I think that it is now. I sometimes feel like I'm on the spectrum because I think that the way that I think is different, and I don't think a lot of people can adapt to that. And I think that people maybe look at me sideways like I have eight heads because I go against the grain often. Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody who's going to sit here and just spoon feed anything that, you know, society says or mainstream society says. I want to challenge it all. I want to break it all down because I think that the entire system is broken, right? And so for me, what it's like to be me, it feels like I'm constantly at war. It feels like I'm constantly trying to prove something to an invisible person. It's sometimes exhausting. It's oftentimes exhausting. It's sometimes empowering. But I think overall, I feel good that I am me, and I'm happy that I am me because everybody else is taken, A, but B, because as I continue to grow and learn about myself on a daily basis, I fall in love with myself over and over and over again, which was a very difficult thing for me growing up. It was very difficult for me to love me. And even as an adult, until just a few years ago, it was really difficult for me to love me. And I think through my phenomenology, I have learned how to do that a little bit better each day, right? And I continue to try to do that each day. So what is it like to be me? It's a very complex question, but I think that's kind of where I'm at right now in this moment with that.
Yeah, and I can completely relate to that. I feel like I've been on this very similar journey of trying to understand, A, who am I? B, how do I build a relationship with this person that I am? When for so many years of my life, I feel like in the world that we were raised in, we were told to focus so much on our family, on our friends, on things outside of us. And I don't know about you, but in the version of Christianity I was handed, it was very much like, don't focus on your heart. Your heart is the evil thing. Focusing on yourself is the problem with society. And it was a huge shift when I realized that, wait, I actually have to develop a relationship with myself. Otherwise, my relationships with other people are going to be all kinds of jacked up.
Yeah.
So what was that process like for you of awakening to that realization?
Yeah, I think for me, so I realized that I was trying on all these different personas.
Mm-hmm.
You reminded me of that. Like I started trying on all these different personas. Like I was like, you know, as we grow, we were different people throughout each year. And so each chapter of my life, as I was growing up, I was trying on different personas, trying to fit in different situations. And what I realized was like, I don't like this outfit of me. Throw that away. Oh, but I like this hat, for instance, of me, and I can keep that. That feels natural. That feels normal. I can rock with that. Then I would try on a different persona and just continue to do that. And I think it was interesting because, like you said, society has taught us that, yeah, we're not to feel, we're not to express our emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not supposed to express our thoughts or anything like this. And they really shut us down. And mainly within the BIPOC community, but I think that can go with many different cultures as well and many different people. But for us, in the way that we grew up, I feel like that was a huge thing for us. And so trying to express myself or like wanting to express myself and not being able to, like that does something to you. And so while I'm sitting here trying to develop and find myself and like love myself, I was also being told that, like you said, that's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's egotistical, you know, and this is before, you know, narcissism even came out, right?
Right,
like,
right.
You know, like, you know, your ego's too big. Why do you only want to think about yourself? Well, because that's healthy to start with thinking about myself. How do I feel?
Mm-hmm.
What do I think? Not what do they feel and what do they think? Because if I start there, then that's not an authentic me.
Right.
Right. Like I'm starting with them. And if you quiet all the voices and really listen to yourself first, you'll know whether or not you like a situation or if you are vibing with somebody or things like this. And then you can move out to the external, but start with you first. How do I feel about this? And so not having that growing up and having to do that later on in life was really difficult. I've done a lot of therapy and I'm still in therapy. You know, I love my therapist is dope. She's incredible. And she's helped me process a lot of that and like get through a lot of that where I shamed and blamed myself for not standing up to, you know, everybody else and or to myself in those moments as we were growing up or not challenging and feeling like I let myself down, right? Like, no, this is what I knew at the time when I was in, you know, middle school, high school and things like that, trying to fit in.
Mm-hmm. This is
what I needed to do in that moment. In order to kind of like survive in that kind of a system, which really sucked.
Yeah.
And so I think even who am I, going back to who am I, in that time, I think there was like a persona that I put on, but the people who really knew me, like how you knew me, the people who really knew me, like who got took the time to really talk to me and not just see somebody who, you know, played football or did, you know, track and stuff like that, who really talked to me, they knew my heart. They knew who my persona was. They understood like, oh, okay. So the athlete is just like a small thin slice of who this human is.
Right.
You know? And so like, I didn't realize that until later. There's that meme, I'm dope in real life. Right. And I was like, yeah, I want to be able to say that about me. And like today I'm able to say that about me because I'm loving myself more. Right. We're all dope.
Yeah.
We just have to see it. And we have to take the curtains back in order to be able to see that dopeness inside of each and every one of us, because there's not another individual on this planet who is like any of us.
Right.
We're all unique individuals. And so when we step into that, you begin to see that dopeness. And it reminds me, Christina, it reminds me of like in the Hawaiian culture, they have a thing called huna, which is like the secret is what it's called. That's how it's translated. They talk about be, do, and have. Right. When you are bono or congruent with being who you're supposed to be, you will do the things that you are meant to do and you will have the things that you are meant to have and it will be enough. And in our society, we are taught have, do, be. I want to have all these things, right? And when I have all these things, when I have the cars, when I have the house, when I have the jewelry, whatever, you know, then I can say that I've made it and I'm going to try to do something for myself. It's not even like do what I'm meant to do. I'm going to try to do something for myself. And then we get into our 30s and 40s and then we're like, okay, now I get to try to be who I'm meant to be. And it's such a reverse way of looking at things.
Yeah.
But if we foster this growth, who am I from a young age with our kids, and we were teaching them to be who they're meant to be, seeing their different personalities, watching their characteristics, and fostering that as they continue to grow, helping them really sit congruent with who they're meant to be, they will do the things that they are meant to do because they sit in congruence. How many times have you felt like what I'm doing right now doesn't make sense, but it feels like I have to do it? Like,
completely. So many times.
Right. And it's like, yeah. it doesn't feel like I should be doing this, but like I'm doing it because somebody told me, or like I'm supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't sit congruent with my heart or my spirit or my mind. And so that's that have, do, be mentality instead of be, do, and have mentality. So I'm working on that with myself and with my sons as well, right? And trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
And it's very important for us to look at these concepts and try to like dissect them more so we can understand how to do that more. And that's really helpful with like self-love.
Absolutely. And speaking of your sons and speaking of being a parent in these wild times that we're living through right now, a lot of the self-work that I've done has been this reparenting of my inner child, going back to little Christina and being like, you are okay. Whatever you're doing to cope, to survive, as you mentioned, it's okay. And we're going to end up being somebody that you couldn't even imagine being. So as a parent, how do you hold that space for your child to foster the relationship that they're developing within themselves so that their internal dialogue, their fatherly internal dialogue, isn't one that's criticizing them or beating them down or doing things that I don't know that our parents were doing anything intentionally, but it was just the culture in which we were raised in. But how do you switch that narrative so that you're giving them a different narrative to live into?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing that I do for my kids and with my kids is give them space. I allow them to explore any and everything that's going on inside of them. And even like going, being super specific and giving an example, my kids could do some kind of art or working on homework or something like this. I don't say, oh, is that a snowman? I'm like, what did you draw? What did you create? Give them the opportunity. I'm not putting labels on things. Mm. I'm giving them the option to choose what they would like to label it as. Right. And I think that was something that was happening with us, is like we would do something like this. And then our parents would say, oh yeah, that's a snowman. And I know this, it's a bizarre example. It's like, oh, that's a snowman. And it's like, oh no, I drew you, right? And
mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, okay, you know, type of thing. But giving them the space for their creativity. And that's something that I at least didn't necessarily get, was the space for the creativity and for the expression. So mm-hmm. I'm changing the narrative because I didn't necessarily have the space for the expression. My sons have the option to be able to talk to me about any and everything that they want to talk to me about. My oldest, Zechariah, came to me and was explaining to me that he didn't want to go to the school he was at. And I said, what's going on, son? You want to talk to me about it, right? So option, do you want to talk to me about it? Not what happened.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the kids pick on me because I don't look like everybody else. Okay, son, can you help me understand what that means, right? Not, well, forget about them. You just need to push through. Like, people are going to say things about you. You just need to let that, you know, none of that. Holding the space for them to express how they're feeling. Can you explain that to me a little bit more, you know? Well, yeah, you know, a lot of the kids are, you know, white, and I'm Black and Mexican, and there's not a lot of people who look like me, so they pick on me because of the color of my skin and this, that, and the other. All right, my man, you know, that sucks. You know, Dad can empathize with that because I've gone through similar experiences when I was a kid. what is that like for you? And again, creating space for them to emote, letting them know that it's okay, letting them know it does suck, so that they don't have to take on this toxic masculinity of, you know, oh, well, we should be knocking them out, you know, or anything, which is dumb, like, it's dumb, right? Like, they get an opportunity to express how they're feeling. If they want to cry, cry. That's totally fine. I remember my dad used to say, boys don't cry. And for a long time, I believed that, right? And even, you know, with my sons, I've heard him say that. I've had to correct him. Like, please don't say that to my sons.
Yeah.
Respectfully, right? Respectfully. Right. Please don't say that to my sons, you know, and because I want my sons to know that they can cry if they feel a certain kind of way. They can, every feeling that they have is valid. It's the expression of those feelings is what gets us in trouble sometimes. And so I want to teach them how to be able to express those feelings in a way where they feel valid and also other people can connect, empathize, and support them when needed. Being self-sufficiency is not just being able to do these things on your own. Self-sufficiency is being able to do the things you can on your own and then also having the courage and wisdom to reach out when you're not able to do those things for yourself. And so I don't want them to ever feel like they have to go through life, their feelings, their thought processes, their spiritual journeys solo. They don't have to. If they would like to, they can. If they feel they're up to the task, they can. But I don't ever want them to feel like they cannot. Our parents parented us the way that they knew how. And for the parents who are able to acknowledge that and admit that, right, you know, kudos. It's a difficult thing to admit that they didn't, you know, get the skills. They didn't have any of those things, or they didn't have the learnings and things like this. And we learned through experience, but we get an option. And I think that's the really powerful part about being a parent. We get to choose how we parent our kids. And so we don't have to do the same things that our parents did, even if it worked. We get an option to choose and change.
Wow. Just the idea of giving yourself the space to say, even something that worked for my parents, something that is a skill that I built based on what they did, even though it worked, I don't have to repeat that. Is there any specific example that you can think of something that worked for you, worked for your parents, but isn't something you're carrying forward for your boys?
Yeah. So let me think about that for a second. So there, I have a couple of examples. One thing, you know, the big, I think this is a big one in the culture, right? Like whoopings.
Oof. Yes.
my pops, at least anyways, you know, he whooped us and really we got beatings, you know? And so going through that process. And I remember when I was in Norwalk growing up in LA, and my brother had opened up the sewer, the little sewer thing. And I was the youngest. They dared me to go down the sewer thing. I was so afraid, but I was the youngest. So like they pretty much forced me to go down. And I was like, okay. And I started going down and my neighbor caught us. Right. And so I got a whooping from her. And then she came and told my mama, my dad came home from working at the post office. And then I got a whooping from him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so that was a way for, that was like a scare tactic, right? It was like a scare tactic to not do those things anymore. So it worked, sure. There are better methods.
Right.
And that was like my whole life, right? Like getting whooped or beat, like abused, essentially. Like, yes. You know what I'm saying? So, because my pops is the kind of cat, he would grab anything around, you know what I'm saying? And so that was something that he did that worked, but it wasn't something that I was carrying on to my children. What I have found is that kids and people, period, will do more for you out of respect than they ever will do out of fear.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm teaching my kids, let's work on this respect factor. My sons already know, like I'm very clear. I'm very intentional around the things that I say and the way that I do things. And so I'm very direct. If I say something, I mean it. I don't say things I don't mean. And you, it's I know people can misconstrue my words. However, if you listen to what I'm saying, I'm not hiding the bullet. I'm keeping it 1,000. Yep. So I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. So my sons understand when I'm giving them a direction or I'm showing them a task and of, like, let's just say cleaning the table, wiping the table down. Hey, this is so dad wants you to start doing these things. I'm going to show you how I do it. And then I want you to learn how to do it. You can do it your way. As long as the table is clean, I'm cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we're going to learn. And then I expect y'all to be able to do these things. You can trade off whatever you want to do, but I want you guys to be able to do these things. If these things are not done, you won't have access to, you know, the Switch or to the TV, the Nintendo Switch or the TV or anything like this. So they understand, and I'm proactively putting the consequences in place so that there's no surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my father would say, go and do A, B, C, D, and E, F, G. If you don't do it, you're going to get a whooping, right? Or he wouldn't even say that. Like, it just, if it didn't get done, you were getting beat, period.
Yep.
If my kids don't do it, they already know what the consequence is. And like, I think the cool thing about what I'm seeing now in the as they're getting older, I don't even have to say nothing to them. If I've asked them, I usually give them a 3-strike rule. So if I've asked them twice already to handle a business and they haven't handled a business, and you know, I give them plenty of time to do it, and I come down and I'm like, Z, come on, man. And I just look at him and he already knows, like, you already know I'm about to tell you, right? And he's like, yes. It's like, all right, you want to go handle that now? And he'll go over and handle it. But he also knows he's not going to get the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't get to play his Switch because by you making a decision not handle your chores, you've also made a decision to not be able to do the things that you want to do.
Right.
And like, helping them to understand these are all decisions and they have autonomy to make these decisions.
Right.
Very different than the way we were raised, where it was like, I'm going to whoop your ass and then you're going to go handle what you need to go handle.
Yep. Yep.
And a lot of times we did those things and we did it to what we thought the quality was. And because it wasn't to our parents' standards, we still got in trouble or still got whooped. Whereas if I go and I see, you know, a speck on the table, I'm just kind of like, okay, well, it's a speck. Ain't gonna hurt nobody. Like, you know, wipe it off.
Yeah.
It's all good. Like, keep it pushing.
Yeah.
Or even giving them constructive feedback. Like, hey, son, I appreciate you handling the table. One thing I did notice was I want you to slow down just a little bit, but I appreciate you doing what you did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to do the same things that our parents did, even if it worked.
Right. And I am so in love with this approach. This is one of the main areas that if I had kids, this is something that I would have obviously changed as well. But I think it just came from a place of fear was the way that we learned to respect our elders. You didn't respect them out of your love for them. You respected them because you were terrified of them, right. Rightfully so. And I love that this generation, our generation, has learned that maybe respect can come through the lens of love, mm-hmm. and can come through the respect of actually respecting the humanity of our children and the respect, the humanity of ourselves, where we're not having to be this huge dominating force that's trying to impose our will on those that we are trying to teach how to human.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to learning how to develop that self-respect, are there some practical tips that you had to cultivate, whether you learned in therapy or just in your own studies, that helps you really foster that ability to honor who you are so you can teach that to your children?
Yeah, and I think those are two different things for me, like learning how to do that for myself. And then also, so like getting the knowledge of understanding how to respect myself, but then also taking that knowledge and applying it to get the wisdom to be able to teach my kids.
Mm.
I think that for me, they're two different things and two different levels of life. So for me, the respect for myself came in grad school, honestly. For me, when I was getting my degree to become a licensed marriage and family therapist, it was really difficult for me because I learned a lot of concepts that I prior had known. I you know what? I'm going to backtrack on that. I don't know if you remember Mr. Reister.
I do, yeah.
Mr. Reister is the one who put me on this trajectory for psychology. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mr. Reister in high school, he had seen the things that were going on. He had, you know, my brother went to Centennial too. And so he had seen my brother and myself and the things that had been done to us by my father. And like, he had heard me one day talking to people at school in the quad. And he's like, "Hey, Parham, buddy, come on over here. Come here." And I was like, "What's up, Mr. Reister?" And he was like, "Hey, buddy, I want you to take my class." And I was like, "What class?" And he's like, "Psychology. His first year was offered at Centennial." And I was like, I'm cool. I had a 1.9 GPA, not because I wasn't smart, but because I wasn't applying myself. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "I want you to come take my psychology class." And I was like, "Absolutely not. I need to be able to play football, right? And be able to run track. Like, I'm absolutely not taking this class." And I laughed at him. I remember laughing at him. I went home that evening, spoke to my mom about it. I said, "You won't believe what he said." And she was like, "Anthony, you're going to take that class." She slapped me upside the head and was like, "Son, you're going to take that class." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because football is plan B. Your academics is plan A. You need to take this class." So I took the class and it opened up Pandora's box in my brain. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, I realized that I had the ability to learn, that I was not dumb or ignorant, and that I was beyond what the stereotypes said that I had to be or would be. And so in my own life, shattered a glass ceiling of what I thought I could become. And when I learned these concepts and these things that were going on, that was like when I really began to start respecting myself, because I was like, "I'm not crazy. These things are real that have happened to me." Like, I was abused.
Yeah.
There was all of these things. There was a ton of gaslighting.
Yes.
My pops was a narcissist. I'm watching like all of these things develop in front of my eyes. And like, I was so happy to know, like, there were words to put to what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
It was really difficult. because I hadn't prior to, I believed that like there was something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
It was all me. And so to have that experience, like, I thank that man for that, because he put me on a path. He put me on a path. I ended up graduating with honors. I got my grades up, graduated with honors. I got academic scholarships and football scholarships. Like, I did something that I was able to be proud of, because he unlocked that inside of me. And that was like really the first time that I have respect for myself. And I didn't have to fall prey to what society said that I was going to be, or my dad said that I was going to be, which was dead, drunk, or in jail.
Mm. Right?
And so like, I didn't have to be those things. Grad school will be the second phase of that. So I consider high school being my intellectual awakening, and I consider grad school being my emotional awakening, where I realize like, I've got feelings. And things like do stuff to me, right? Like, they make me act and think a certain kind of way. And it was a trip, because my professor, Dr. Armando Gonzalez, he was teaching that day, and he said something, whatever he said in class, it activated me. And I just started like, I felt every single emotion possible. I was like laughing and crying and like doing all the things at the same time. And when I was in the Bay, our cohort for my master's program was 13 people. So ain't nowhere to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And like, our tables are in U-shape where the professor's at the front. So there's nowhere to hide. Everyone can see you. And then I'm also the only brother in the class, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's watching this happen. I'm like freaking out, having this breakdown emotional like experience. And they're like all coming to like support me. And he's like, back up, fall back. He needs to go through this himself, right? And I did. And it was like an incredible experience. I would then have shame, and I left the classroom after that, and then I didn't come back to school for 2 weeks. Then he hit me up and like kind of baited me into meeting him. And when we met, we shared each other's phenomenology, where we came from, the things that had happened to us, our stories, and like we bonded on a whole different level. And he convinced me to come back to grad school, right? And so it was incredible to like go through that experience and have somebody like him help foster my awareness and my growth in that journey, in that emotional journey, to be able to get to where I was at that time and really break through that barrier too. So I had the intellectual barrier I had to break in high school, but then I had this emotional barrier that I had to break through when I got into my master's degree. And it was just phenomenal. I saw the world completely different, just completely different. And it was just something I had never experienced before. So that was kind of the beginning of that. And over the years, you know, I've been a therapist for 12 years. And so like I continue to grow and my emotional IQ and EIQ is just so important because without the EIQ, it is difficult to respect yourself.
Right.
And sometimes you become a people pleaser. You become somebody who denies yourself or puts yourself last in many aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, continuing this journey, like I've gone through spiritual journeys, I've gone through emotional journeys. Like I am a student of life. And so like you said, respecting myself, and then how do I teach that to my kids? So going through those processes allowed me to learn how to respect myself. One of the things that I do for myself in order to help grow in insight is I do intentional feeling. And so I set aside times throughout the week where I'm intentionally allowing myself to feel the emotions that I'm feeling or go through the thoughts that I'm going through that I keep pushing off to the side for later on in the week or the month, right? So for me, it's Wednesdays. So Wednesdays, typically what I do is I light my candle, and this smell of the candle I only light it when I do this work.
Okay.
So that my brain and neurology understand we're going into deep space.
Got it.
And so it just programs it into understanding that. So I light my candle. I have a playlist that I play, that I know that I'm going to go through the shit with myself.
Yeah.
You know, the lights are dimmed, and I kind of just sit in the space and allow myself to go through that space. When I'm doing this with other people and like teaching them how to go through this, I typically set a timer. But when I'm doing it because I now have the skills to come in and out of that space, I don't necessarily worry about that. But I typically tell people, if you're going to do intentional feeling, set a timer. iPhone, for whatever bizarre reason, when you hit snooze, it does a 9-minute timer. So what you want to do is you want to set your timer for about 15, 20 minutes. And this is like a way to do it with limited time. So you do your iPhone for 15 to 20 minutes. You go into the space, lighting your candle or incense or whatever it is that you want to use to be able to get your mind into the space and kind of activate you into knowing we're about to go into deep work. Get your playlist on that you want to play, and it could be whatever kind of music that you like to listen to. It could even be maybe a podcast that you frequent, right? Or talks or motivational things, whatever it might be. Put that on. You then go into the space. You can sit, you can lay, you can be in a ball, be comfortable, period. And then as you're going through that space, just whatever's coming to you, and it's not necessarily the same thing as mindfulness, right, where you just allow the thoughts to come and then you release them, or even like with meditation and stuff like this, where you allow them to come in and let them go. You really want to activate yourself,
mm-hmm.
going into those spaces that you continuously avoid, right? And so in this space, you can journal, you can do creative art, but it's around whatever those thoughts are. So I like clay, I like drawing, but I draw incredible stick figures, but I can't draw. but it's just the movement for me. And same thing with the clay. So one of the things I do while I'm in the space of intentional feeling, I'll get the clay and whatever I'm feeling in the moment with that thought or the experience, I construct the clay into what I think it looks like or what it feels like, right? Or what it looks like or what it feels like internally, emotionally, or what it may be, even like a texture or an idea, image. And then I'll sit on that, I'll reflect on that, and then I will smash it up to release it and then reconstruct it in the image of what I would like to see, what I'm trying to manifest. So that way I can actually work towards that. And then I keep that clay mold for a few days, maybe for the week, just to kind of like let it sit, because I only do this intentional feeling once a week. And so maybe I'll just sit it for the week until my next time or whatever. But in that 15, 20 minutes, I'm doing something that's going to be able to express what's happening inside and like elicit these things. After the 15, 20 minutes, the alarm will go off. When the alarm goes off, you hit snooze. The snooze for the 9 minutes is then when you put in your coping skills. A lot of therapists that I know, or a lot of people that I know who do healing work, they talk about, yeah, we have to learn our coping skills. We have to cope and this, that, and the other. And it's like, yo, we need to actually teach people how to feel.
Yeah.
Let's back up and teach them how to feel. And then we can teach them how to cope with the feelings.
Right. Or
if we're teaching them how to cope, it's for the intention of teaching them how to feel and then sew themselves back up so that later they can continue on through their day. And then later on, if they need to, they can reopen and then be able to sew back up, right? Like, that should be the intention around teaching coping skills, mm-hmm. not to just continuously suppress the emotion.
Right.
So when that timer goes off in that 9 minutes, when you hit the snooze, what you're going to be doing is using your intentional coping skills in order to help you to feel a little bit better. And that's all you're doing for that 9 minutes. If at the end of the 9 minutes, you still feel the way you feel, hit snooze again and go back into coping again and continue to keep coping until you feel better, or at least at baseline with yourself, so that you can continue on with your day. And then what I do is when I leave this space, I thank myself and tell myself I love myself and I appreciate myself for the journey that I've taken today, and that I'm proud of myself for whatever work we have just done. And so then after that, you repeat the process the next week. But you can do intentional feeling as many times as you want. And I encourage it with any and everybody, because it's really teaching us to get in touch with who we are, the limiting beliefs that we have about ourselves that keep us from being able to function in day-to-day society, let alone with our kids and et cetera. Right. And so like, I love being able to use this practice and be able to do these types of things with myself. And then the translation over to how do I teach this with my kids? Giving my kids the space to do the same thing.
Right.
I have videos from when my oldest was like 1.5, right? And he's just developing language. And we taught them sign language initially so that they could be able to speak to us, because we didn't know what they were saying, what they wanted, what they needed. And it was an easier way for us to learn and them to express themselves. But I've always tried to teach my son's emotional intelligence. So I have a video of Zechariah when he's like 1.5, 2 years old, and he is crying. And I'm like, what's going on, son? And he's like, I'm sad. And I'm like, oh, man, what's going on? Why are you feeling sad right now? And he said, because I wanted to play. And I said, okay, I feel that. Do you understand why we couldn't play right now? Yes. And I said, okay, cool. What can we do? I can breathe. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, my God.
I'm just like holding his heart while we both breathe together, you know. But I wanted him to feel. Tell me what you're feeling. Let's identify that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to validate and normalize that. Like, that's okay. I understand where you're coming from. Do we understand why we couldn't play? Right. So giving him the understanding and then giving him the rationale. That way he knew why. And then he also felt like, okay, I'm allowed to feel this way. And then, okay, cool. So what can we do to help ourselves feel better in this moment, since we know that this is not an option right now?
Mm-hmm.
And he chose to breathe. And so he did that for himself. But like, teaching our kids these things and giving them the space and giving them grace. Also, right. You can teach somebody something or tell somebody about something, and that doesn't mean they're going to necessarily get it on the first try. People aren't chia pets.
Right.
Overnight successes. We take time to grow and develop these different things. And we have to have grace and compassion for where we all are in our journeys and like be able to love through that. I can love the fact that maybe they're not successful in this because I see them trying to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even further than that, they're trying to understand what is it within themselves that is holding them back from being successful in this? Is it a limiting belief? Is it something that's going on externally in the world? Right? Like, in trying to better understand these concepts so that they can do better for themselves and for the world around us. So I want my kids, more than anything, I want my kids to be happy, of course. And I want to be able to show them the self-respect and the self-love through those different types of practices. So we do a couple of different things to foster this. One, when we get home, when we get out of school and I pick them up, we have a dance party. We're always dancing.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, we my kids and I, we love to dance. We love to sing, right? We get down. And so we shake it off, shake the day off. Let's shake the day, right? Let's get it out. And then we talk about what's going on, like what the day was like, you know, was there anything that came up for them throughout the day, et cetera, et cetera. And then they have 15 minutes to journal when they get home. They have their own little books. Eli doesn't know how to write yet, so he just draws whatever the day is, and Zechariah writes whatever his day was like. So they each get that time and space to be able to do that. And that's something that I want to provide for them. Like that's, for me, that was my escape. I was a writer.
Yeah.
I wrote a ton of poetry in high school, at college. Like that was my escape. And journaling was also my escape, but like poetry was my biggest escape. And it allowed for me to get out and get these processes, things that I couldn't say out. I felt like I couldn't say out loud. And so I want to be able to provide that outlet for them early. Maybe they don't take it as they get older and they don't want to use it. Cool. They can find other tools that they can use to be able to express themselves. I don't read their journals. You know, if they want to show me or tell me about them, I'm cool with that. And I respect their space and privacy in that too.
Yeah.
So I want them to understand whatever you're thinking or your or whatever's happening or feeling for you is safe. Pop's got you. Like I'm not perfect. I will flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I've flawed many a times. And I want you to know that I'm going to do my best to be able to hold this space for you, so we can grow together and you two can be able to lean on each other for that support too, for things you can't talk to Pop about.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that we do. So we talk about the problems in the car, we dance and shake it off, and then we journal at the crib with the intentional timing to be able to do that. Because they don't necessarily understand or have the tools to go into intentional feeling in the way that we can as adults. I have to be able to find other ways to activate that with inside of them, so that they can at least begin that process early on and develop that until they're old enough and they have those skills to be able to do this on their own.
Right. Oh my gosh. You said so many things in that I'm absolutely in love with. And, you know, when I'm speaking to parents today, so many of them, and I think this form of parenting is like the gentle parenting where you give them the space to be who they are. And it just gives me so much hope for the future that we're teaching our children what we needed to learn. And I kind of want to, in this last piece of the episode, segue into how us learning how to develop love within ourselves, integrity, respect, and to be able to step into our own authority, how does that translate in our relationships and connections with other people, whether it's just friendships or even romantic relationships? How has learning these skills manifested and transformed your relationships in your life?
Yeah, so I think that goes back to like the whole people-pleasing thing. Like I was a big people-pleaser because I wasn't happy with myself. I didn't love myself. You know, I got into an accident when I was a kid and my head was split all the way down and I developed scars and different things like this on my face. And so I was very, like I had, you know, self-confidence issues and stuff like this. I just didn't love me. And then you add in all the other things on top of that. So I think I was a people-pleaser for a long time and I put, when we talk about friendships or relationships and dynamics, in terms of that specific realm, I tried to please all of my friends and like sometimes be a person I wasn't. So I wanted to be accepted. I wanted people to like me and things like this. And it just wasn't authentic. I think in relationships, I often held my partners higher than I, because I didn't feel worthy of. Right. And I had this I am not enough limiting belief and core wound that continued to exhibit itself. And really, that I am not enough continued to exhibit itself even within my friendships, right? And different dynamics. For whatever reason, work was not one of those things. And I think that's because, like, with work, you kind of have an instant gratification because you know what you put into it, you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
Type of thing versus that's not necessarily true with a friendship and that's not necessarily true in a relationship. You may not get back what you put in because that there's no obligation to the other person to do so.
Right.
With work, if, you know, I'm a barista, if I make a coffee, somebody gonna drink it. Instant gratification, right?
Yeah.
Tell me where I stand and I know exactly where I stand. So this piece where I continued to have this core wound that showed up in my life continuously, I think that was something that I need, you know, through therapy and through my own self journey and work and stuff like this, was very important for me to work on. I think it's also important to talk about the difference between, like, as I think about how these, the self-love developed and transitioned over, I think it's important to talk about the difference between a limiting belief and a core wound. So a limiting belief is more so things that like keep you from being able to achieve certain outcomes, right? Whether that be in a relationship and your family dynamics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a core wound is something, and limiting beliefs can be disbanded. You can have a phenomenal experience with a limiting belief and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can work through that. You can go and talk to the homie, therapist, et cetera, and it could be worked through.
Right.
But a core wound is a little bit different because a core wound is like a stone.
Yeah.
And a core wound is something that you can chip away at, but it will most likely be with you the rest of your life. So you can chip away at the core wound. And my core wound is I am not enough. I can chip away at that core wound. It won't ever go away. And I know some people are like, well, that's a limiting belief. I don't look at it from that perspective. I look at it as I accept that as who I am.
Mm.
I accept that this is a core wound of mine. And as opposed to me falling victim to that and disliking myself, I actually try to put things in place that remind me how to love myself and that I am enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's where that self-love comes in. I can have this core wound, and as I chip away at it, I get better and better on a daily basis of dealing with it. I know that I can wake up, and if I wake up and I'm like, it's going to be one of those days, right? I literally, Christina, I get back in the bed and I put my 9-minute snooze on,
yeah.
And I will wake up and get out on the literal opposite side of the bed to try to do a different routine than what my brain was getting ready to take me through. And I try to like a pattern disrupt. I try to like disrupt the pattern of what was about to go down because I already know where it's going to lead me to, and nothing good comes from that. So
put
things in place, right? And have compassion for myself. Like, all right, I'm feeling it. Let's do something now so that this doesn't tumbleweed later.
Mm-hmm.
Get in bed, wake up, transition out, and handle my business, right? That doesn't mean that nips it in the bud the entire day. There might be other things that pop up for me. Okay, I'm feeling this kind of way, right? Let's just say like my partner, for instance, I hadn't heard from them in the morning, right? Or I sent them a text and they haven't hit me back in like a few hours. That I am not enough begins to come back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll do is I'll be like, okay, let's just fall back for a second. What are the facts? Show me the Carfax. Person that you are not enough and that this person doesn't care about you. Fall back, relax, you're good. You know, I start going through that for myself. I posted about this before and recognizing fear, false evidence appearing real.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing that false evidence that appears real, it's not anything. Until I see the facts about this, I have to really slow myself down so that I don't fall into the anxiety, the depression, the angst, all of these things. And so that core wound doesn't eat me alive. So those are kind of like the detriments. But on the healing side of things, I do things intentionally to continue to heal, to continue to grow in self-love. Like I said, the intentional feeling is one of those things. I go to the beach pretty much every morning, Monday through Friday, at least anyways, after I drop my kids off and walk the ocean, because the water is something that I'm very connected to or drawn to. And it's a healing source for me. And I believe that the ocean gives me messaging when I come out there on things I need to work on or on things that like are going on in my life currently and things like this. And so I try to receive my messaging. I sit there and journal and reflect. Or if I'm not journaling that day, I'm listening to my music and just projecting out into the water to see what I get back in reflection. So these are all like different things that I'm trying to do to be intentional with my love. Reminding myself and acknowledging my strengths and achievements. That's another really big one that I never did, right? Acknowledging all of these things. You know, my therapist is like, she's Black. She was like, bruh, have you looked at where you've come from to feel like where you are? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I get it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no. Like, do you realize, like, you now have your own business? Like, this was Circle of Life Therapies was something that you used to talk about when you were a kid, when you were in high school. Like, when you came from that classroom, Mr. Reiser's class, like, I had a whole plan developed on Circle of Life Therapies. Like, you have put that into fruition. Like, it's here now. Do you realize that? Like, your kids now have something that, like, they can look forward to. You can pass down as a legacy. We talk a lot about legacy work with ourselves and stuff like that with her. But like, these are things that it didn't seem right. And it felt like we were not allowed to celebrate those strengths and accomplishments, right? Because again, going back to, but even before the whole narcissistic term, it was like, oh, why are you boasting? It's like, I'm not boasting. I'm just proud.
Right.
Yeah. I'm able to accomplish this as a Black individual, right? You know, and like, the world that we live in, where I'm not supposed to have these things, or I wasn't supposed to go this route. And so giving myself that love and acknowledgement and saying like, yo, go you. There you go. Lil you will be happy to see that you made it here. Go back and step up to them and thank them for their journey. Thank them for what they have done for you to get to this place. You know, and then also let them know they can go to sleep now. But yeah, that's really like a big piece of it, and trying to like spread that on to my kids and give them the same kind of hope. Because the things, you know, like I said, our parents tried the best that they could with what they had. I would like to believe our parents did the best they could with what they knew and what they had.
Same.
And yeah. And I just tried to spread the love and the peace and like the understanding, the compassion, the empathy, the wanting to connect. I tried to share and spread all that with my kids through trying to show them, because more is caught than taught. Mm. You can try to teach a kid all you want to, but they're going to do what they see. So more is caught than taught. And so I try to teach my kids that and like recognize like what, how being intentional with your words and your actions is so important, because what you say to your kids, what you speak on to your kids, you're speaking on to your kids' kids. And we have to break those generational cycles of trauma through the things that we say and do to and with our kids.
Yes.
So it's incredibly important for me to try to do the best that I can. Like I said, I know I'm flawed. I'm a flawed human being, and I'm okay. I can accept that I'm a flawed human being because I know that I'm not perfect, because I ain't a robot. I want to be human. I'm not going to blame and judge and shame and guilt myself for having a human experience. I'll just try to do better each day.
Right.
I want my kids to do whatever they want, but I would hope that they learn and adopt these different types of mechanisms, because they teach me things all the time. This is a two-way street. As much as I think I'm teaching them, they're teaching me too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want them to be able to adopt these different types of lifestyles, to be able to have that self-love.
It's so beautiful. And it just feels like such an honor to be able to be in this space now, holding this space with you, knowing where we both came from. Like, I still see us in Senora Hughes's class, just like as being crazy. And I'm proud of us, because we did really good.
That part, absolutely. And it really is a privilege. And like, even from when we reconnected on IG and began to talk, and I was like, yo, this is dope to be able to see the full circle, right? Like this circle and watching you, right? Like, and seeing you, you know, grow and see, even acknowledging myself growth and stuff like this. Like, how beautiful, like how incredible. And then now we're able to like link up. So yeah, absolutely a privilege and an honor for sure. Definitely proud of us.
So good. So good. So how can people find you? Tell me more about Circle of Life Therapies, the whole spiel.
Yeah, so Circle of Life Therapies is meant for our BIPOC community. And so I'm a licensed marriage family therapist. And so I provide therapeutic support to our Black and brown youths and families as well, to be able to bridge that gap in the services. Our communities don't, while they might have access to these different services, it's not equitable. And oftentimes the prices are like out of control. And so I offer them to low to no cost to be able to provide those therapeutic support with my youths and my families. I'm fully virtual now. I do go out into the community now once a week to be able to see my youths and families for my higher risk ones, which in my eyes, everybody's high risk, right? We're all high risk because we all matter. And so like, I want all my youths to know, like I got them. But it's one of those things where we didn't necessarily have that when we were kids. And so I wanted to be able to create a circle of life therapies because we didn't have those in our school, right? Nobody was coming to have conversations with us about how we feel and the things that were going on in our day-to-day life. So I wanted to be able to give that back in some way, shape, or form. And this just is one of the ways that I'm able to give that back, to be able to have these conversations with our youths as a member of the BIPOC community who has had real experiences, who has gone through, you know, different things in life and that I can relate to them. And so it's one of the most powerful things for me when I get into a room and I'm having these conversations with my youth, teens, and families. And one of the first things I always hear is, it's so good to see a person of color. Mm-hmm. Because in my line of work, there's just not a lot of us. And then also to get more specific, a Black male therapist. And I also do therapy in Spanish as well. So like to be able to like go into these different worlds and connect and bridge gaps, it's really empowering for the people that I serve. So that's what Circle of Life Therapies is about. You can find me online or Instagram at Circle of Life Therapies is my tag. And then I also have TikTok, Simba Z Therapist, Simba underscore ZE underscore therapist. And then if anybody wants to be able to contact or connect me and they're looking for any kind of support or therapeutic resources, it doesn't matter where you live. They can always hit me up because I want to be able to give them that. AnthonyLMFT@gmail.com. Anthony as in licensed marriage and family therapist, LMFT@gmail.com is the way that they can reach out to me.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Anthony. It was, I mean, so much fun connecting and catching up, and I hope we get to do this again.
Yeah, we absolutely got to do this again.
And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at Mental Magic Podcast with a period after each word. And thank you as always for listening. Bye.